Welcome to KiteLine, a weekly radio program from WFHB that focuses on issues in Indiana's prison system and beyond.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach, and we're your hosts for this program.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. Here on KiteLine, we hope to share these words across the prison walls.
Before we get started with this week's theme, we want to share some prison-related news.
According to the Indy Star, the Indiana Department of Corrections wants to provide tablets to all Indiana prisoners so they can connect with their families and improve their education. The department believes that those are important ways to decrease recidivism, which is about 35% in Indiana. Critics of the plan, however, say tablets would provide a distraction from harsh and unjust prison conditions and quell inmates' opposition. Furthermore, the plan could encourage price gouging by technology companies that provide tablets made especially for prisoners, exploiting the captive buyers on their purchases of games, movies, and music. The corrections director admits that charging inmates fees they cannot afford would defeat the purpose of the plan. So far, the costs to incarcerated people are undetermined. The plan ignores the fact that most inmates are indigent. The plan calls for the money for entertainment procured on the tablets to go to a private company, with the state keeping 10% of the profits.
Earlier this month, the Egyptian NGO, Association for Freedom of Thought and Expression, released a report about the status of university students imprisoned by the military regime. The report, called Besieged Universities, documents nearly 2,300 students who've been charged and imprisoned, alongside 21 who've been shot in extrajudicial killings.
A press release from supporters of Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, a national prisoner leader being held in the Ohio State Penitentiary, has announced that he has now been on hunger strike for a month, beginning Monday, February 27th. On Friday, March 24th, he was moved to the infirmary, presumably due to failing health. The administration at Ohio State Penitentiary, or OSP, has been targeting and restricting Hassan's communication access on any pretense they can find or invent since his outspoken support for the nationwide prisoner strike on September 9, 2016. Hassan and fellow prisoner Jason Robb are on death row and have been held in solitary confinement since the 1993 prison uprising in Lucasville. They believe that the ODRC and the Ohio State prosecutors targeted them after the uprising because of their role in negotiating a peaceful surrender. State officials, when interviewed for several recent documentaries, have admitted that some prisoners were given deals to testify against Hassan, Robb, and others, and that no one really knows who committed the most serious crimes during the uprising. However, in court, they argued the opposite to secure death penalty convictions. Hassan and Robb began refusing food when the OSP administration put them on a 90-day communication restriction for being interviewed by the Netflix documentary series Captives. Hassan appealed the RIB's decision, arguing that they violated policies regarding timelines, access to witnesses, and prisoners' due process rights. Director Moore's response failed to address any of the issues raised in Hassan's appeal. The current hunger strike is part of an ongoing struggle for equal protection, basic human rights, and survival after decades of living under the most restrictive and torturous conditions of confinement at OSP, Ohio's Supermax prison. Supporters are asking people to please call Director Gary Moore at 614-387-0588 or email him at drc.publicinfo@odrc.state.oh.us, as well as Northeast Regional Director Todd Aishi at 330-797-6398. Demand that the punishments being imposed on Jason Robb and Sadiq Abdullah Hassan be reversed, and that OSP authorities be severely reprimanded for violating their rights to due process and displaying bias toward them. According to Facing South, Florida State Prosecutor Aramis Ayala announced in mid-March that she would not seek the death penalty for cases in the jurisdiction where she was recently elected as Florida's first African-American state prosecutor. After her announcement, Florida Governor Rick Scott removed her from a high-profile murder case. He's reportedly considering removing Ayala from her position. She said, quote, "There's no evidence that shows the death penalty improves public safety for citizens or law enforcement, and it's costly and drags on for years for the victims' families," unquote. Ayala referenced an FBI report finding that the South has the highest murder rates in the country and also performs 80% of all executions. Those facts refute the idea that the death penalty is a deterrent. The South also has the highest number of death row exonerations, raising serious concerns about executing innocent people. Of the 157 people who've been exonerated from death row since 1976, 26 were from Florida.
This week, we share some of our conversation with Steve Garrett. While doing time in Ohio, Steve became a master at filing grievances and advocating for himself and other prisoners. Steve shares some anecdotes from his time as a jailhouse lawyer, and we couldn't help but admire Steve's determination and the care he shows others through his tireless efforts to change conditions for prisoners. Here's Steve.
My name's Steve Garrett. I was locked up from 95 to 2000 in Ohio and became one of the most radical prisoner activists in a way, with medical care, retaliation, and all I did was study law, basically. Did legal work with for envelopes and did mass mailing to attorneys, organizations, Prison Legal News. Dan Cahill was one of my main teachers and everything. I only got to meet him for a short period of time until he was kicked out. And the warden didn't want him, but I've been kicked out to the camp twice and became an expert with the grievance system and helped teach people the grievance system, especially medical care. And when you file a grievance with the medical grievance system, your institution inspectors are not medically qualified to render decisions on medical care whatsoever. No medical training or nothing. So I used to statues with the medical board, nursing board, dental board in my grievances and everything, putting the medical staff on notice with the statues and everything regarding the code of ethics for medical care in Ohio. And I'm also a patient under the Bill of Patients' Rights. And that just, I mean, they kicked me out of the camp. The IHS administrator was so mad because I had my doctor's test scores from the medical board under public records and everything, for example. Where did you get this and this and that? And they treated me like a king after I knew this loophole and everything and stuff. But I tried to tell them to come up with a new separate independent medical grievance process. And they're just like, what makes you think of this? I said, common logic. You know, I'm looking out for the best interest of my health, basically. And they hated me. And but they had a holder on me because of the U.S. Department of Justice. I got the U.S. Department of Justice to come in, see diabetics in person, and here they were cutting off their diets basically, and not giving them fruit and everything, forcing them to eat apple cobbler loaded with sugar, and they shut down the diet kitchen, for example. I got the mental health inmates pay raise statewide also under there, and I got a shelter built up there, so a pill call, we're under a shelter, is not standing in the rain to get our medications for our disabilities under the American Disability Act is what I filed under. And what else? The IHS had a ward system there where they would throw you in there for medical treatment.
What is the IHS?
Inmate hospitals in the prisons, and they had this ward back there, and the one guy had third-degree burns on his feet where boiling water tipped over and soaked right in his feet, basically. So he's there for medical treatment. Here it is. I worked in a hospital, and they got no commissary, no mail, no envelopes, no nothing, no TV, no radio, just like they were in isolation. And I thought that was wrong, and I reported that to the Department of Justice. Then after this ongoing, they were allowed, hey, put a TV in there, radio, giving them phone calls to their families and everything and stuff after I did that, basically. Started treating them with more humane conditions and everything. And same thing with the RTUs, residential treatment units. They were there for the mental health, and I got them a pay raise because they were paying them the same wages as they were in isolation. They didn't do anything wrong. They violated no rule infractions. They were there put there by a psychiatrist, psychologist, basically, and everything. So I helped bring about positive changes with the grievance system without having to file lawsuits, basically, and everything. But the wardens got tired of me for filing criminal charges on the guards on that aspect, and what else? Theft by deception on them for taking our money, on some people's money, even with the medical copay and stuff. They charge a guy four times and everything. I filed theft by deception charges against them and everything, and they get their money back and then treat them basically instead of, you know, taking their money and everything over and over and over for the same condition, basically. That's how you gotta. That's how you rock these people and stand up. But a lot of people are so intimidated by the retaliation system. And the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in 1999 here in Cincinnati, they Thaddeus X versus Blatter is the case. They reversed all prior rulings, and you no longer have to shock the conscience of a jury in order to prevail on a retaliation claim in the Sixth Circuit. Before, you had to shock the conscience of a jury. Now they made it easier. So I would put that quotation at the end of my grievances and let them know and put them on notice, basically. And after I started doing that with that case and everything and stuff, you know, they would address my grievances and answer them and stuff. So I started winning with grievances and everything. And then here's another philosophy also that I caught on is you file your grievances, your informal complaints in the system, and here it is, you lose. So I sit back and I watch and everything and start observing everything and stuff that I file on. Then they would turn around and fix, fix, fix. And I'm like, okay, so here it is. I lose on paper, but technically I won. Yeah. So they don't want you to know that you win on paper. So if you keep on filing and everything, things will get fixed and get changed and everything. You just won't see it in writing and everything. And there's a reason why you lose is because they want you to give up.
No. They can't admit to
wrongdoing too.
Wrongdoing because of open them to liability.
Open them up to liability
on
some cases.
To lose no matter what.
Yeah.
Evidence you have. You have to lose because this guy cannot put it in writing that you won.
True. So on a lot of cases, yeah. Because then you can take it to an attorney because you got to exhaust your administrative remedies. That's another thing. It's sad, too. Back in our years back then, and I think it was 1994, Prison Litigation Reform Act passed by Congress.
Yeah.
If I'm thinking 1994, and now the new people that are in there don't know this. And Congress, you have to exhaust all administrative remedies before you can go to court. And people don't know this. The young people, even down lawmakers' offices, don't even know. The interns and everything that we see, you know, they have no clue about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what the process is, basically. So that's why he's saying that, because you have to you have to exhaust your administrative remedies in order to even get access to the courts and file a lawsuit. So that's why you also lose on paper too. But I would sit back and I'd just like, okay, fix, and they're fixing everything. Telephones, ventilation system out the camp and everything. My sergeant's like, who are you? You know, I'm a white shirt and I can't even get this stuff fixed, and you're out here and you're getting everything fixed. Here in Ohio, I found a loophole. One of my other teachers, Rick Wise, and he always said to me, he says, find out how we lose our right to vote out of thin air. And the Higher Revised Code has 296101, and the Higher Revised Code, that is a statute where you lose your right to vote. However, Ohio is a statutory law state, so we're governed by statutes, and then it's also, we're not a common law state like Kentucky, and how their laws can be just out of thin air. Anyway, a court speaks through its journal, and here it is, your sentencing journal becomes journalized under the Higher Revised Code also. It's Title IX something. I can't remember that statute by heart. But anyway, and your sentencing journal becomes permanent record once you're received at the reception center. Here it is, 296101 is nowhere in our sentencing journals. All over the state, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 1 year ago, nobody uses 296101. I found a case article from the U.S. Department of Justice and State X-Rail Corrigan versus Barnes, 10th District Court of Appeals here in Columbus, and they ruled that 296101 is considered an additional punishment, and here it is, only the court can impose a punishment. You got separations of power on the Ohio Constitution, and here it is, DRC cannot perform a judicial function. Filed for a register to vote was what I did, and I found that case, and Rick Wise said, you found it. I registered to vote. Secretary of State threatened me with felony charges. The Ross County Board of Elections threatened me also in writing. I wrote them back showing me, you know, please explain to me in detail how I lost my right to vote. And I laid it out for Secretary of State. No response. So I got called up to the inspector's office. He's from the Attorney General's office. Our inspector come down there from the AG's office because so much strong litigation was coming out of Ross for some reason. I wonder why. And I was the one networking for all the law guys in the background. He goes, oh, what's this you're trying to vote? I said, yeah, show me where I lost my right to vote. He goes, you're going to challenge this, aren't you? I said, yeah, show me where I lost my right to vote, 296101. And I laid it out to him and everything. And he just shook his head. And I said, now charge me and everything. He goes, you're talking about filing charge. I said, I want you to. I want the Ross County judge down here. Let's go to court. And I want him to show me where I lose my right to vote out of thin air. And to this day, nobody has ever explain to me, attorney, nobody, how we lost our right to vote out of thin air. And I'd love to see all the inmates run the right to vote, because all your prisons are built in double-digit unemployment areas, basically like Youngstown, the coal mine shut down, all that, steel mills and all that. And that's how these prisons are built in these locations. Just recently, William Blue is his name. He contracted gangrene. He died for 3 minutes. Lost all circulation to his hands and feet. This was last year, about a year ago. He got a 5-year flop by the parole board, so I had a meeting with the parole board chairman last year, And I questioned them and everything about reconsideration. What about medical? You know, again, we're giving you 30 days now to file reconsideration, which is wrong. What if something medically comes up? William Blue lost both hands and both feet. Here it is. He was being neglected, basically. So I get on, I met his girlfriend at one of our meetings. She was in tears. She was a nurse and very nice lady and stuff, and was just didn't know what to do. So I just started sending emails to legal counsel. He started getting care. They transferred him to Toledo, also facility and everything, because they were neglecting him, throwing grievance forms at him and everything. The nurses were and everything. Here's your grievance form. He has no hands. So I started requesting the, can I be his legal liaison, basically? And the legal counsel didn't answer that one. They didn't want me going in there. So I called the U.S. Department of Justice. Can I file on his behalf since he has no hands and no feet? No way. I even asked for a headset where he can talk and type, basically. They don't have that in there either. They kind of ignored that one, but I put it on notice, basically. Why don't you have it for people like him? And he went all the way to the full board, and we went to his full board. The attorneys from Cincinnati showed up, and he brushes his teeth with his toothbrush in his elbow like this, and then brushes his teeth like this, basically. And that's what they told the full board, and he can't even wipe his butt, nothing. But he does have a prosthetic left arm and both legs now, and they're just now measured for his right arm, but he should be getting out here. He got a parole. So I help people with legal cases like that, you know, they're real big ones. Another inmate died at Pickaway just recently, but it was 90 degrees. We got two calls that he died during count. He begged for medical attention. The guard said, no, shut up, get back in your bunk. He died during count. And he's had chest pains, profusely sweating. And what I do is I send a email out to the attorneys. I send a complaint to the Inspector General's office, knew it would trickle down, and it went to the Highway Patrol. Highway Patrol ends up calling me, and I did a public records request to the Franklin County Coroner's office, requesting for the autopsy. They called me also as well, but his they got intercepted. A lieutenant from medical center called the coroner's office and said, we have a doctor to sign off on him now. And so they intercepted and stole his body, basically. And then they told the coroner's office that he died at OSU. I said, how's that? He died in his bed. And there's no doctors at the institutions to sign off on dead inmates. So they always die at a hospital. No, 50% of them die in the institution. So they intercepted his body. And then all of a sudden, he went to OSU. We went to OSU morgue asking questions and everything. He was already shipped across and cremated. Female guard was having affairs with inmates in there, letting them have a party house in her unit. She already put a hit out on Spider, another one on Dotson, threatened him, actually. He was a captain's clerk, and then she came over to our unit, then put a hit out on King. And I was over inmate mail and everything, and she was letting another inmate, favoritism, go through the inmate mail, and King seen it and wrote her up for it. She came in there yelling, screaming, cussing at him and everything. I saw it from my own eyes and everything and stuff, shaking my head. And then it got, and they broke a lock in his key. She came to his cell with another inmate from another unit, locked the door, locked herself in a cell, telling him to drop his grievance, his informal and everything, and I'll drop my ticket. He goes, you do what you got to do, I'll do what I got to do. I care less, like that. And he was a paralegal too. The hit was carried out when our guard was off and everything on his night, and I saw it, and King was chasing him, coming down the cell stairs and everything and stuff, and while he was getting assaulted, that inmate that was in there dropped his cell key. Oh, you live in 7 house, cell number 204 or whatever, you know, so we knew exactly where he lived and everything, had him and everything. So King, since the Ohio Attorney General back in Betty Montgomery sued for Lucasville riot settlement back in 1996-ish, I think it was. But anyway, she opened this up, and Gumpel. With Gumpel and all that, where they could sue the inmates in the Lucasville riot settlement, right? So inmate King sued this inmate for $5,000, right? And everything. He's in isolation and everything. He defaulted. King is still collecting. And we've been out 16 years, and he's still collecting from that inmate. Probably owes $2,000, collecting half his state pay. His parents or somebody in the family sent him $100-some last Christmas, went straight to King. He sued him, $5,000 judgment, boom, and everything and stuff, you know. So that's why I did, this is what we did to people and stuff. You're going to threaten me, intimidate me and everything? Go ahead and everything and stuff. I'll write the parole board. I'll max you out. I'll sue you. I'll get half your state pay and everything. And this is the way we rocked in there, basically. And King stood, he stood up to him too. We went to we went to court, had court down at Ross Correctional, and the Court of Claims came down there and everything, and the attorney and stuff, and we testified. And then the judge said, is there anything you want to say before we speak? I said, yes. I said, I'd like to have institution investigator Baker. I want to have him removed from the court, basically. And they said, why? I said, he's the investigator. He already did his investigation. I told his investigationer and everything and stuff, everything I knew and stuff regarding all these cases and stuff. I said, he's sitting here with a blank piece of paper. I said, she's attorney general. She represents the state of Ohio. He has no say. He don't represent the state of Ohio no more. I said, he did his investigation. He's done. I said, now he wants to take additional notes, you know, when he left out everything I told him. And the judge kicked him out of the courtroom. The AG slammed back in her chair and stuff. So when I got testifying, I told the judge that I brought about positive changes with the grievance system and everything. And I said, I can give you examples. And she objected. She was so mad. And I got to tell this stuff in court, basically. And then we won appeal. We lost there. We won an appeal. And then the judge died on us. And then we got to have another hearing down there a third time and everything. But we end up losing and everything. It's like because of a new judge. But we were going to win, basically. But we still won $5,000, you know. And that guy's still in there doing a life bid. Another thing that people in Ohio do not know, I'd love to publish this in a newsletter for the prisons and everything, but they would not let it in. Look at Ohio Revised Code 12434. I used it all the time with retaliation and guards and stuff and staff, basically, on my grievances regarding retaliation. But 12434 is suspension statute for all your state, city, county employees, all your municipal employees, every cop in the state of Ohio, basically, falls under 12434. And in there is discourteous treatment to the public. So when a cop pulls you over, starts, you know, harassing you like you see on TV, these riots, every state has a statute like this, and people don't know that.
Thanks to Steve Garrett for talking with us. Even after his release, Steve continues to use both the legal system and his own tenacity to fight for prisoners in the Midwest. This has been KiteLine. Anyone affected by the prison system in any form is welcome to write us via our P.O. Box, KiteLine Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. KiteLine wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at KiteLineRadio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you or someone you care about affected by the prison system? You can call us to record a message to be played on the air at 812-269-2512, or you can use this number to record a message to a loved one behind bars. You can hear previous episodes of our show or get more information on the prisoners or stories covered on KiteLine at our website, kitelineradio.noblogs.org. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. KiteLine is intended as a means of communication between people across prison walls. We are not responsible for all views expressed on the program. WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program are not responsible for the views expressed on the show. This has been KiteLine. Join us every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for more stories, news, and insights about the impact of prison on our communities. Thank you for listening.